auspicious occasion. This is nice to observe an auspicious occasion before it even happens, because it prepares us for the auspicious occasion that's coming tomorrow, the appearance day of Sita Devi. Similar to Krishna Janmashtami comes before Radhashtami. So we not so long ago observed Ram Navami, and now we're observing Sita's appearance day. And it's not that Krishna had to follow the pattern that Ramachandra observed, but there is some symmetry of thinking of one of the verses in Brahma Samhita, where Lord Brahma is describing Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual abode of Krishna. And then he describes the form of Krishna, and then he describes the pastimes of Krishna. And there's this phrase, Nijarupata Kaya Kalabihi. For those of you that are familiar with the verses. In the explanation, the commentary given by Bhaktisiddhanta, which follows the Sanskrit commentary of Jiva Goswami, Krishna, in his pastimes, is enjoying pastimes with Radharani and her various expansions. And these various expansions, Nija Rupa, various expansions, are tens of thousands of goddesses of fortune, each of whom are endowed with various expertises, or the 64 arts. This is like a page and a half list of the 64 arts that are invested within Srimati Radharani. And their expansions of her, their expansions of Radha, so they're of the same tattva as Radha. They're Shakti tattva, they're not living entities, they're not jivas with a high post or service. Some jivas can become associates of those eternally perfected expansions of Radha, but the direct expansions of Radha, they have a cluster of the expertises that are in their fullness in Radha. Prabhupada explains this, that variety is the mother of enjoyment. So Krishna is the Rasaraj. He's the enjoyer of all rasa. He expands himself, his internal potency is Radha, and she expands herself to expand the happiness of Krishna. And a distinction, there's many, but one distinction in Ramachandra's pastimes is Ekapatni Vrata. He had only one wife. Although a king may have many, his father had many, his father had three wives, and so forth, but he took this position, the ideal king, Ramachandra, had only one. So we don't have similar pastimes as Krishna had with many of the expansions of Radha, or in Dwarka, 16,108 queens Krishna became the husband of. But they're all in one in Sita Devi. And so Sita Devi has a very special place in our hearts as devotees. So we have this opportunity to appreciate Sita Devi this evening. And it's a little challenging to where to begin and where to end. because the glories of the Lord and his consort are unlimited. So I selected one section of Ramayana, and it's at the end of the section of Ramayana where just before Sita, Ram, and Lakshman enter into the Dandak forest, the end of this section of Ayodhya Kanda is where they meet Atri and Anasuya. Because in that section, Sita has audience with Anasuya. Now, in the Leela of Lord Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra is taking the position of a human being. And one of the attractive aspects of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes is he appears to be like a human being. He appears to undergo tribulation like a human being. And he endures the pain of the separation from Sita, like a husband might feel in separation from his wife who's just been kidnapped by some awful personality. There's a very nice set of prayers in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam where the section of Jambudweep, the middle island in Bhumandala, is being described. One of the sections is Kim Purusha Varsha. That's where Hanuman resides after Ramachandra returned to Ayodhya. He took everyone with him except Hanuman and told Hanuman to stay until the sun is finished, not till the end of the night, end of the day. Until as long as creation exists, just sing his glories for the benefit of persons in this world. So he does that at Kim Purusha Varsha, and one of the prayers, there's eight prayers, and two of them are on the same point, which is there's no question of Sita and Ram being separated. It's impossible, he declares. They're eternally associated. It's not possible. Says it twice, two different. And then similarly, being subject to lamentation like an ordinary person, it's not possible. So it's something else besides what it looks like. It's a pastime. Because they're eternally associated. Not possible. Since they're eternally associated with one another. It's like, you know, the sun without sunshine. Anyone ever see a sun without sunshine? No such thing. Ram without Sita? No such thing. There's this wonderful description, many of you are aware. It's another evening's discussion, I won't go into it this evening, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on his South India tour, and when he leaves Sri Rangam and he's heading further in the southerly direction, but he goes a long distance to a place where there's one Brahmana who's in this ecstatic love of Godhead mood as the lover of Ram. And he decides he's going to fast till death because how can I eat? How can I maintain my life when Sita, the goddess of fortune, the beloved of my Lord Ram, has been kidnapped by Ravan? And Ramachandra said, it's only a pastime. It's not possible for a demon to even see, what to speak of touch, the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. It's not possible. My dear Brahman, don't fast, don't destroy your life. Please break the fast. I'm assuring you it's not possible. So the Brahmana, having faith in the word of Ramachandra, he took his meal. And then later, further in his self-indulgent tour, Lord Ramachandra found in the Kurma Purana the text that said it's true, confirmed, that it was a Maya Sita that was touched by Ravan. So he had a copy made of the book. He left the copy in the temple and took the original. Took it, went all the way back to where the Brahmana resided. Showed him the text and said it's true. So it's not possible, Sita being touched by Ravana. Not possible. It's a lila. So this, how the Supreme Lord performs his pastimes with his associates must, if we're going to understand properly, we must understand it's the internal potency. He who is body is Satchitananda, and his consorts and immediate associates, their forms are also Satchitananda. They perform pastimes. It is not like us. They look like us. This is part of the intimacy and the attractiveness of Ram's pastimes. He appeared to be like one of us. He lamented the loss of Sita. Hanuman's a better authority than any one of us in this world, especially in terms of Ram's Leela. And he says it's not possible. So we should just accept Hanuman's word. It's not like our lament. It's a transcendental love and separation. That's what it was. And the pastime was arranged so that he could enter into that mood of transcendental love and separation. Because love and separation intensifies the quality of love. And then when there's meeting, it's so much sweeter after separation. So, there's other aspects of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes where he appears, and in this case, Sita appears to be subordinate to their devotees. In this case, Anusuya. But as Krishna likes to be subordinate to his devotees, Sita likes to be subordinate to those who are her worshippers. So there's, it's a lila where she's revering in pastimes. Ram is a Kshatriya, and Atri and Anusuya are Brahmanas, so they're honoring the Brahmanas. That's suitable. And Anusuya is showing affection to Sita like she's her daughter, although she's the goddess of fortune. And she speaks like a mother might say to a daughter, or an elder might say to a young girl, oh, you are like Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Only she is. She is. And shows affection upon her in different ways. So Anusuya asks Sita, please give a description of how it is that you have come here into the forest with Ram and Lakshman. So she goes way back into her birth on the appearance day, in honor of the appearance day of Sita. She describes her birth, that one day the king of Mithila, Janak, was preparing the ground for a great sacrifice. And as he was plowing the ground, I came from the earth, not born of mother and father. And King Janak was very eager to have a child, and he accepted this is a divine arrangement and treated me with all love and affection. By the way, King Janak isn't just one of the Prabhus. He's one of our 12 great authorities, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, in the same category as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma and Shukadeva Goswami and Prahlad Maharaj and so forth. Yamaraj himself, King Janak, he's way up there, authority-wise. So he accepted Sita as his daughter. And he cared for her, she says to Anusuya. He cared for me with the greatest of affection. And when it came time, when I was of marriageable age, my father, the king of Mithila, only wanted the finest quality of husband for me. So he arranged a particular Swayamvara arrangement that only the most qualified person could become my husband. You know the Leela, so it's just not saying something new, it's just hearing again and again and again and again, because it's the pastime of Krishna ever fresh. Navayovanam. So Vishvamitra Muni had brought purposefully, knowingly, Ram and his younger brother to come to enter into the Swayamvara. So when they came into the assembly, King Janak was very happy because he's a pure devotee. He understood who Ramchandra was. So the bow was brought forth and effortlessly, like an elephant breaking a sugarcane stalk. He picked up the bow, not only strung the bow, but cracked the bow. And Sita had a garland ready to offer to Ram. The royal marriage was held in the kingdom of Janak Maharaj. And she goes on to describe through the contrivance of one of the queens, Ram is sent into exile and deprived of his rightful claim as the elder son to the king, the kingdom of Dasara. And so I've come into the forest to accompany my dear beloved husband and Anasuya, because she, one of the renowned qualities and powers of Anasuya was her chastity. There's volumes to be said about the chastity of Anasuya and the strength that she had because of that. So she showered her affection upon Sita and gave many gifts to Sita to make her stay in the forest appropriate for the service to her husband that she was going to do. This is what Anasuya's types of persons do in association with other Sita personalities. They shower their blessings and they shower their affection and their kindness and their well wishes, and then they enter into the Dandaka forest. Ramayana is such a wonderful literature that it's told again and again within the same literature. All the pastimes are in different ways, told again and told again and told again. It's so nice. So as that ends the Ayodhya Kanda and then the Aranya Kanda, entering into the Dandaka forest. And the description is so beautiful. Sita is so happy. She says to Ram, I so much enjoy, of all the places in the kingdom of Dasara, the most enjoyable place, as you know, was the royal garden. That was the happiest place for me. And now that we're in the forest, all the beauty of nature abundantly surrounding us, in your presence, accompanied by Lakshman, what a perfectly joyous situation of life. I wouldn't want it any other way. All my cares and concerns have flown away. I'm so happy. She is appreciating the in detail, what the visions and the sounds. Her happiness is abounding. And then the description goes, they come across different hermitages of sages, and the sages are so delighted to receive Lord Ramachandra. Lord Ramachandra is so delighted to offer his respects to the great sages. So they're feeling very happy. And then something untoward happens. They see in the distance this huge figure, big as a mountain, with a mouth almost as big as the rest of his body, roaring and making terrible sounds, terrifying in all directions. And that beast, disfigured, ugly looking personality, sees Ram and Lakshman and Sita moving through the forest. And he roars and comes charging at them. And he grabs Sita and sneers at Ram and Lakshman and says, "I'm Virada. And I am going to eat you both. And I'll keep this one for me to enjoy." And Ram enters into this mood of human-like lamentation. Oh, no. He's the personality of Godhead. Oh, no. What a most greatest misfortune has come into my life. Oh, Providence, how can this happen? My dear most beloved Sita, seeing her in the hand, even touched by such a creature, another man, but this terrible personality. Oh. Human love. And Lakshman gets on his case and says, "Oh, great hero, don't lament like this. You're as powerful as Indra. You're with your mighty bow and me by your side. Let us protect Sita." Oh, yeah, protect Sita. So they immediately fire arrows and rounds of arrows, and the body of Virada is covered like a porcupine with arrows. And blood is coming from his body, and he sets Sita down, and he comes charging at both of them, raising his spear and his big mouth wide open. Ram shoots an arrow and breaks the spear into little pieces. And they both grab their swords, and Virada picks them one up like little children, picks one up in one hand, the other in the other hand, and starts racing off into the forest. Ram says to Lakshman, "Let's go for a ride. Whichever direction he goes, that'll be the path that we follow through the forest." And Sita is calling from the background, "Ram and Lakshman, don't leave me in the forest. There's wild bears and tigers in a very dangerous place, and do something. Protect me." So Ram turns to Lakshman and says, "You cut off this arm, I'll cut off that arm." And they chop and chop, and his arms fall off. And Virada says, "I've been given this benediction. I entered into the world as the son of Java. And I underwent great austerities in the forest, and Lord Brahma gave me a benediction that no weapon could kill me." So Ram said, "I am the son of Dasarath, and he is the king of the Ikshvaku dynasty, the Sun dynasty, and we're his sons, and we're duty-bound to give protection to all of the innocent people in the Dandak Forest. We will have to destroy you because you've declared you're the devourer of so many sages. We have to give them protection." He can't be killed by any weapon, so we'll have to bury him. So Ram says to Lakshman, "Dig a big pit. I'll put my foot on his body to hold him down. He has no arms." When Ram placed his foot on Virada's body, he became transformed. The curse that he had received had now been relieved. And then he said, "Oh, you must be that person who I was given the benediction that you would relieve me from the curse of Kuvera. Previously, I was a Gandharva in my last life named Tungaru. And I was put in charge of one of Kuvera's favorite dancing girls, Ramba. And I wasn't able to take care of her properly. And he became angry at me. And he cursed me that I should fall from the heavenly regions to the earthly realm and become a rakshasa. But then he gave me the benediction that I would become relieved when I met Ramachandra. So that's you, just by the touch of your feet upon my body. This curse has now been relieved. Please bury me so I can give up this terrible body. And I can maybe turn to my position. For some reason he wants to go back and become a Gandharva again. So they buried him alive to allow him to give up that body so he could be relieved from the curse finally. The curse first with the body and then this terrible disposition. Rakshasa, terrible disposition. Before he left, Virada indicated, you'll find shelter very nearby with the sage Sharabhanga. So Ram went in the direction that had been indicated by Virada. And as he was approaching the hermitage of Sharabhanga, he saw something very unusual, very mystical. He saw a chariot floating above the ground and a great majestic looking person with a crown and a scepter and ladies fanning him with chamra fans, standing talking with a sage. And he said to Lakshman, what's that? I don't trust this. You stay here, protect Sita, and I'll go forward and find out if this is a rakshasa trick or what it is. So as he approached, the celestial-looking being turned and saw Ram coming, and he quickly mounted his chariot and left. When Ram approached, the sage was so happy to see Lord Ramachandra. So he introduced himself. I'm Sharabhanga, living here in the sage with many, many other sages in my hermitage. And Ramachandra said, oh, I'm the son of Dasarath, but who was that? No, that was King Indra. King Indra had come to visit me and offer me the opportunity to go to Brahmaloka. But he said that I heard that you're in the vicinity, and before I go anywhere, I want to have your association, your darshan. So very kindly you come. And so Indra, when he saw you coming, he said, now isn't the right time for me to interact with Ram. It'll come later. And it comes later in Ramayana. So he left. So please come to my hermitage and accept our hospitality. We only have wild roots and berries and fruits and things, but the best that we have we'll offer to you, and please accept our hospitality. So they came to that hermitage and they spent the evening discussing with the sages on transcendental topics together. Spent the whole night just joyfully discussing Harikatha, topics about Lord Hari, taking the position of one of us, along with sages, the ideal king. Then in the morning, after his morning duties, he was ready to go, and they said, no, you can just stay here. And no, I've taken this vow. I must fulfill the vow of my father, given by my father, to live in the forest, not to live comfortably. So Sharabhanga said, well, there's another sage in that direction, down the direction of the Mandakini River, some 12 miles, and there's a grove of trees, and just past there you'll find his hermitage. So he will be, like me, very happy to have your association. And apparently Sutikshna was a well-known sage at the time. So Ram was very happy just hearing his name and went to his hermitage. And in the course of being in this hermitage, again, same very wonderful reception, herds of deer, very, very peaceful setting in an area where so many more abundant than all of the other places because of the auspiciousness created by the austere, saintly personalities residing there. The trees were supplying abundant fruits, fragrant flowers. It's like a celestial place, although it was a hermitage in the forest. And even that you see here and there, there's many deer and they're not afraid because they know that they're protected. This is a very peaceful place. But over on the other side of where some of the cottages were, there was a big stack of bones. And Ramachandra said, "What's that?" He said, "Oh, that's the bones of the sages left after the Rakshasa had devoured their bodies." And Ram said, "Can you explain?" "Oh, yes. In this region, there are many Rakshasa personalities. They just feast upon the bodies of sages like a special delicacy for them. And we're hoping, we're petitioning you. You're the king, the son of the king. Please give us protection from these terrible personalities roaming at night when we're doing our yajnas and just desecrating the yajna arena or even eating the bodies of the great sages. Please give us protection." Ram said, my word is never broken. I always keep my vow. I give my vow that I will give all of you sages protection here as long as I'm in the Dandaka forest. This is the duty of a great follower, or follower of the great Dasarath." So the next morning, again, Ramchandra left, entering deeper into the Dandaka forest, accompanied by Sita and Lakshman. And Sita's face looked disturbed. Ram could understand from her face something is troubling her. So he asked, "Sita, what's troubling you?" And so she blurted it out. That you're a perfectly religious man, but even the most perfectly qualified, ethical, religious man can become corrupted. And I'm worried about that possibility. According to scripture, there are three primary sources that can corrupt even the most virtuous of persons. This is a lesson from Sita. That's why I'm speaking this. One of them is falsity. If one deviates from the truth, then all of the good qualities can be lost. However virtuous and righteous one may be, one who departs from the truth becomes fallen. And even more egregious is if a man cohabits with another man's wife. "But Ram, I'm your beloved consort. You just give your word and you always keep your word. Even the word of your father, you keep the word of your father at the greatest of expense. You never have and never will depart from the truth. That I have no doubt. And I know your character. There's no other personality in your life than me as your beloved wife. You're perfectly virtuous and righteous. Of these two, I have no doubt. But the third is when someone receives power, they become very powerful. They can abuse or misuse that power and bring pain and suffering and hurt and even kill others without cause, without religious observance of religious principle. And to illustrate this, let me narrate one story. There was a great sage. Very exalted personality. So austere in his practices that King Indra got a little nervous. He thought, "Oh, maybe he's trying to do austerities and take over my kingdom." You know, Indra gets like that sometimes. So Indra came as disguise as a worldly king. and he was traveling about in the forest carrying his sword. So as he entered into the place where that sage was doing his austerities, he requested the sage, "My dear sage, I'm traveling in the forest alone. I don't really require the sword. May I just leave it by the side of your cottage, and I'll come back and retrieve it later. Just keep it for safety." "Sure. Leave it by the side of the cottage. I'll just keep it here for safety." And Indra left. But because the sage was truthful, he kept his word. Whenever he went to fetch water, he took the sword with him. Whenever he went to wash his clothes, he took the sword with him. Whenever he went to gather items in the forest for his edibles, he took the sword with him. And just by holding that sword here and there and there and here, there's power in the sword. And eventually, he became corrupted just by handling the sword. And he started with the sword doing cruel things. And he fell down from his spiritual position. So similarly, Ram, you've taken this vow to enter into the forest and you're carrying with you your bow and arrows. And the sages have asked you for protection, yes, but the Rakshasas haven't done anything to you. And you've taken a vow that you'll kill them, although they've done no violence to you. So, Ram, I'm concerned like this. And she went on and on, and then fell silent. And Ram said to Sita, "Just see the quality of your love for me. No one could speak like this to me, except you." Later on, Ram says something like the same to Sugriva. "You're speaking the way that you're speaking to me out of your love for me." Oh, he said to Sita, "You're speaking like this because of your love for me. But you know, I never depart from my word, and my word is to live by the principles of Dharma. Yes, I'm in the forest, but I'm the son of Dasarath. And Dasarath, as the king of the whole countryside, now ruled by Bharat on behalf of Dasarath, as the royal family, it's our duty to give protection to those who are praja. That's religious principle. And Sita, I give you my word. I will not use these bows, this bow and arrows, or my sword, or any of my kshatriya paraphernalia, other than in accordance with religious principle. I give you my solemn vow." So Sita was very happy. She accepted, because she had full faith in his word. One of the teachings or trainings that I received as a young brahmachari in Hare Krishna ashram was a very simple statement: a man is only as good as his word. Really simple. I remember discussing this with Vishnu Gadat here, with young brahmacharis together in the Henry Street Temple. "Man is only as good as his word. You give your word, you keep your word. One that can't keep the word, not just a king, anyone, not just a brahmana, anyone. Give your word, you keep your word. If there's something that becomes an obstacle for you to keep your word, you go to the person who gave your word to and explain to them, "I'm having difficulty keeping my word because of this obstacle. Please release me or forgive me or allow me to modify the word that I gave to you." But you're bound to that person. You're bound to keep your word. Ramchandra's teaching and Sita is teaching, we must keep our word. And that way it'll protect all of the other religious principles that are important for us to uphold. And conversely, if one is compromising on abiding by the truth, anything can happen. And when anything can happen, generally it does. And this religious principle, cohabiting with another man's wife, it's abominable in any religious tradition. And that one thing destroys all other things. But then this other is not just with a sword killing someone, or a bow and arrow killing someone, or a gun killing someone. These things do go on. But when one has some power invested for whatever the reason, that power is only to be used according to religious principle and not otherwise. Just like Arjuna with his dilemma of his duty, being a kshatriya, it was to give protection. So whatever the arena of some authority, some position, some power, some something, and we all have something. Your parents, you have some power over your children, or the Sunday school teacher, or whatever it is, something. We all have something. That there's something, recognition of authority invested. And we need to utilize that only according to religious principle. This is this Yukta Vairagya principle that Lord Chaitanya teaches. It's liberating. And if you don't know what religious principle is, you should find out. You should seek guidance on, is this or that the application of religious principle? Because it can destroy all other good qualities if we're not thoughtful and cautious and in the proper mode of devotion, properly guided. We have to live our life. We have to keep going down the path of life. But we should be very mindful of these three things. So this is a nice Sita Uvacha message from Ramayana. And many other nice things to say about Sita. Maybe you'll be inspired tomorrow. You read some other section of Ramayana that glorifies Sita. In the morning, midday, and evening. In her honor, something. There's so many. Go to the section in Ramayana when Hanuman is sent by Ram to bring Sita. And what does Sita say? Read that section. I won't even tell you what it says. Just read it. It's like, it's so wonderful. She's the pittance. Although she's been tortured, Adam is ready to just destroy those Rakshasas. So, you know, they should be forgiven. He's so soft. At the same time, she said to Ravana, Ravana, you're wicked and cruel and sinful. By my chastity, in a flash, I could burn you into little cinders. Just the power of my chastity, but I won't do it without the order of Ram. But the Rakshasis, they were under his order, and they're just following his order. And Prijata came and pacified Sita after being tortured and tortured and tortured by Ravana. And the Rakshasis, she snuck in, and the daughter of Ravana's brother, help me.
Vibhishana.
She came specifically just to pacify Sita, saying, Sita, take courage. I had a dream. Last night I had a dream. Ram and Lakshman came, and they were in a golden chariot soaring in the air, and they came to redeem you. And a big battle took place between Ram and Ravan. And Ravan was killed. And Ram came here and took you back to Ayodhya. Such an auspicious dream. Sita, have courage. And she went on and saying, he will never touch you. Ravan will never touch you. Because he has this curse, if he ever touches another woman, he'll instantly die. So he will not harm you. Ram will come. Please take courage. Sita, Don't weep like this. And Sita began to cry, saying, you're so kind. Although you're amongst the Rakshasis, you're not like the Rakshasis at all. So I take this vow that if I ever get released from this condition, all the Rakshasis should be forgiven. And she kept her word. Okay, that's the time for class to end. So, read some sections from Ramayana about Sita's qualities. There's so many. When she hears from Lakshman that she's to stay at the ashram of Valmiki, what is her mood? Ideal. Any comments or questions? Discussion?
Yeah. It's probably impossible for you to remember this, but toward the end of your discussion, you mentioned three principles that we to live with.
Truthfulness? Cohabiting with another man's wife? Number three is using power or strength, bringing misery, pain, suffering, or death to another outside of religious principle. He says specifically, or she says, out of enmity. Okay, I think we're done. Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.